Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. I'm so glad you're here with me today on this show. Today, we're going to be talking about addiction. You know, there are millions of people that have addiction issues, whether it's alcohol, drugs, food, shopping, or it's sex. There's a lot of addiction out there that is really hurting people, you know. And unfortunately for many, it's the addict is the last one to know that they really have a problem. So they're wandering around, and yet, you know, if you're listening to this show, you know, we like to get to cause. So not just the symptoms, to the cause. What is the cause of addiction? You know, is it psychological? Is it physical? Is it mental, emotional? Is it all that? Is it a spiritual malady? Well, we're going to discover today the exact causes of addiction, and also some of the things that you can do right now to take steps. If this is you, you're facing something that's you haven't been able to overcome. If that's you, then this is going to be a great show to listen to. And if you have a family member or a friend that you want to be able to maybe help with their addiction, then this is also going to be a great show for you to listen to. So, yeah. This is also a good show to pass on to people that, you know, that's how we change, we grow, we evolve ourselves as a species, is when we can help each other to upshift our thinking, upshift our consciousness, and live from higher levels of awareness. All right, I'm going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have my very special guest, and we're going to be talking all about addiction today. Are you ready to transform your life and get what you really want? Hi, this is Ken D. Foster, and over the past 30 years, I've helped thousands of people change the course of their lives by doing one special thing daily. This is the foundation of my latest book, The Courage to Change Everything. It is the ultimate guide to awakening the transformative power within you to get what you want. In this book, I'll teach you exactly how to unlock your hidden potential, break through your limitations, and get what you want, no matter what's happening in the economy or things beyond your control. So why wait? Get your copy of The Courage to Change Everything right now at couragetochange.us. That's couragetochange.us. There's no risk to you if you're not fully satisfied that this book has supported you in getting what you want, just to return it for a full refund. Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster, and I'm very blessed here today to have Evelyn. Evelyn, I want to say your last name properly, so I'm going to let you say it first.
Lighty, like the light bulb.
I love that, Lighty. Okay, I could have said it about four different ways, and I was like, I'm going to let Evelyn say that, because she is the light. So let me give you a formal introduction here. For those of you that don't know Evelyn, she's a featured speaker and an active member of the Christian Women Speakers. Evelyn has written 18 books and has more than 35 years of diverse counseling experience, specializing in healing trauma, understanding relationship dynamics, improving communication, and overcoming addictions. Highly regarded for her seminar in multicultural counseling and education, she gives special attention with issues to people from various cultures and ethnic backgrounds. You know, I kind of get led into the show around addiction, and I know you do so much more. We're going to be talking about your new book today, too. Why don't we start on that topic, Evelyn? How did you find yourself working with the addiction community?
It started years and years ago. When I was a child, my father was an alcoholic, and I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't know what it was then. And as I became an alcoholic myself at a very young age, I was able to go to treatment, get help, find God sent me the best therapists in the world at the time. And it's just evolved. And I always had this desire to help children, other children like me, because I married a man who was alcoholic and a batterer. And I always knew that wasn't really him. And I always knew it wasn't really me. And so I searched and searched, and that's the search for sanity. It took me many, many years of searching to find the help that I was looking for and to discover what was wrong with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, search for sanity. I mean, and I know that's the title of the book. That, I think, is what a lot of people are looking for, and yet they have models, just like you said. You grew up in a certain model, a certain way of, your parents, interacted in a certain way, and you probably learned some of those behaviors. I know I did from my parents. And, I grew up thinking that this is just the way it is, and didn't really realize that there were a lot of people out in the world that were not facing addiction. They were not arguing and yelling with each other. They weren't coming home to a home where you really didn't know what was on the other side of the door. It was that place. There's a lot of folks that don't know that other paradigm. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
There's the issue of what is wrong with me, not what is wrong with them. And as a child, you have to blame yourself, because if you don't blame yourself, you're totally powerless. So if you blame yourself, you can fix it. You can change. A lot of adults do the same thing. It's, if I'm at fault, I can change this. But if you're at fault, I can do nothing except tell you how bad you are.
Right. And a lot of people look outside themselves and see that, it has to be somebody else's fault that I'm this way, right? So what you're saying is we got to switch that model. We got to just start looking to get your power back. We got to look at ourselves to be able to see what's working, what's not working in our life, and really take a step towards recovery from whatever issue. I have a lot of people on the show, and the speakers, the guests, and they have a lot of different points of view. I don't think I've had anybody talk about the addiction point of view in my recent memories. So I'm thinking this is a really important topic for people. How does somebody know if they're like in a dysfunctional relationship? It's kind of funny. You think, wow, people are yelling, screaming. This is dysfunctional. But a lot of people don't think that way. They think this is normal. How do we get people to understand it? What quote normal is?
The question is not what is normal, but what is healthy. And when you're a child, bad behavior is normal. It's, you grew up with it. It's there. And that's normal for you. When I got older, I started looking for what's healthy. What do healthy people do? What do other people do? How do they behave? And as I said, I had some of the best people in the world in my life. And I started doing workshops. And actually, I am in recovery. I have 44 years of sobriety now.
Wow.
And that has been amazing for me to walk that path. And the thing is, a child doesn't know it's not them. So the only way you can figure out what's wrong with you is to look at what happened to me, not what's wrong with me.
So what you're saying is that it's important for us to be kind of candid about our past, and not try to deny the past was there, or somebody, the traumas, the dramas, the things we went through. It's important for us to acknowledge that. Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. And we have children have a loyalty thing to their parents. It doesn't matter how bad they're being treated. They have a loyalty issue. And particularly, like my parents said, never tell anyone outside of this house what's going on in this house. It's nobody's business.
And there's an old saying, in recovery, you're sick as your secrets. So it kind of goes the opposite of what some of the parents, I know that's how I grew up in my home. If something was happening in a house, you never told anybody. It was, you could talk about it between you sometimes. Otherwise, you never told anybody anything outside. Yeah.
No. Yeah. No. We didn't even talk about it among ourselves. I tried to talk about it. I had five brothers and a mother who was in total denial. So nobody really wanted to hear what I had to say.
Well, what would you say was the catalyst for your changing the course of your life? What was the catalyst that helped you to change?
I was married to a battering alcoholic. I was had a lot of problems, sick a lot. And I have a younger brother that I absolutely adored. And I was in the hospital, and he was taking care of my kids. And he picked me up from the hospital. And when he got me home, and of course, my husband was drunk somewhere. When he got me home, he said to me, "I am never going to help you again. You could be somebody if you wanted to be somebody. You could be. You're putting up with this. You do not have to. I'm just not ever going to help you again." And 3 months later, he was killed in a freak accident. And on the way home from his funeral, I said, "I will be somebody, and I will do it for you." And I went to college. I got a divorce. Over 50 years ago.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, a lot of people out there, they feel like they're in no-hope situations. Okay. And I don't know if it's a lot, but there are no hope situations and they don't see a way out. What would you say the way out is?
Well, I didn't think there was a way out because I grew up in a church and you don't get a divorce. That's one thing. The other thing was when I went to talk to ministers and asked them for help, they said to me, "Go home and pray and everything will be all right. If you have enough faith, everything will be all right." Well, let me tell you, everything is not going to be all right with a batterer until you take some steps to protect yourself.
Yeah, there's an old saying, faith without works is dead, right? So in other words, you got to take action. It's not about just faith. Yeah. Well, listen, you've been a counselor for many, many years, and I know you see a lot of different people come in. What was it that you went, "I think counseling is the way I should go"? Why did you think that?
I didn't. I kind of fell into it. I absolutely loved what I was learning, and what I really wanted to do is work with children. Then I discovered that you can't work with children in South Dakota, because if you try to work through a school, you can only go so far. And I mean, you just can't. So I switched to working with adults, and I just kind of fell into the addiction field because that's what I knew. I really did know that. I knew what it felt like. I knew what was happening. So that's kind of how I fell into that. And then my goal was to work with families, and I developed some family workshops, and I worked with families across the nation, helping the whole family get together and talk about things. Because the one thing in our family, we could never talk about anything. It wasn't there. You can't talk about something that's...
Yeah, a search for sanity. All right, listen, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to take a little deeper dive into that search for sanity. And we're going to talk about Evelyn's new book titled A Search for Sanity. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. the station that makes you feel good.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. I'm wondering, are you or are somebody that you know and love part of the 19.4 million people in the United States today that is suffering from drug or alcohol addiction? If so, that's what we're talking about today. This is an important show. And Evelyn is here talking with us. She has over 43 years, did you say, sobriety? Congratulations. Amazing. She's the counselor. She's written 18 books, and she knows what she's talking about here. Evelyn, search for sanity. So many people are in denial. So many people are trying to take the easy way out. They're trying to, you know, they're not bad people. They just, you know, they're trying to, you know, make life work, but they haven't figured out a way to make life work on life's terms. They're trying to make it work on their terms. And unfortunately, what happens is they get to a place and they create a lot of misery and suffering in their lives and the lives of others. How do we break the cycle, man? How does the cycle break?
Well, the purpose of my book was to help people understand how sneaky addictions are, how they kind of just sneak up on you and you have no idea what's really happening to you. In my case, I felt crazy a lot of times. I didn't know I was an alcoholic because alcoholics around me were so much worse than me. I was a binge drinker, and I always made sure that everything was in place and my kids were taken care of, which first sign of an alcoholic is that taking care of everybody else first so you can drink without being interrupted. I didn't understand that. And I wanted people to understand how sneaky and diabolical this disease is. And I thought, okay, I could stop for a while. And then I could actually go back and drink again because, see, I stopped. And that didn't work. But I did it a couple, three times, stopped, and then thought, okay, I can do this now. But I never could. I embarrassed myself many, many times out in public with my, what I have to say is drunken behavior. And I didn't like it. It was horrible. I had a lot of remorse.
Yeah, I think we all have remorse to hurt the people that we love the most. And, you know, it's interesting. You say it's kind of sneaky. It kind of snuck up on you and you thought you could control it, but it was really controlling you. And, so, you know, and I think there's a lot of folks out there that way. Yeah, I think that, you know, it is a disease of denial. It's a disease that sometimes the alcoholic's the last one to know. Sometimes alcoholics they'll drink once a year. There are actually alcoholics that I know that they could drink once a year, they binge, and then they quit. And they go, see, I don't have a problem. The problem is that during that binge, sometimes cars would go missing or they'd hurt themselves in some crazy way or definitely embarrass themselves in some way. So this is I think one thing that I learned about alcoholism is that, you know, if alcohol is a problem, it's a problem. If you think about that line, if alcohol is a problem, it's a problem. If you're drinking and you're creating problems with alcohol, then alcohol is a problem in your life. I think that's the key. The book, A Search for Sanity, One Step at a Time. I love that. When people read the book, Evelyn, what are they going to get? What are they going to walk away with when they read it?
Well, for one thing, they're going to walk away with my acknowledgement that God does exist. Because after my brother died, I was so mad at God. I was always mad at him because in our family, I blamed God for everything. But after my brother died, it's like, okay, I'm done with you. Not talking to you anymore, not having anything to do with you. And then in this process of trying to get well, I found God and he found me, actually. He never lost me, but I lost him.
No.
There was a moment in my life where he came to me and he told me something that only he could know, because I had never told another soul. It had to do with me being sexually abused as a child. Never told anyone because I didn't think anyone would care, for one thing. And for another thing, in those days, a lot of kids were sexually abused. We talked about it with each other, but we didn't tell adults because they didn't care, or that was our thinking.
Yeah, and a lot of them didn't care. A lot of them, there were no consequences for an adult abusing a child, in the generations past. I mean, a lot of times they would blame the child, or they would blame, they'd find blame somewhere else, but never on the person that was the abuser.
Yes. So I talk about that in my book, and I talk about how God came to me and talked to me. I talk about the sexual abuse. So this is a book that people need to be aware of that does have triggers. And we have a trigger warning in the front of the book, because I wouldn't want anyone to feel worse after reading it. I would want them to feel like, oh, thank God I'm not alone. I'm not the only one. And so many people feel like they're the only one.
Well, we never want anybody to feel worse after reading a book. In fact, like Al Mellon says, sometimes the books trigger us, but that's a good thing, because it's bringing up something that probably needs to be looked at. And on my website, I know somebody can get a free session with me, kendfoster.com, if you need to talk. Over there on Evelyn's site, which we're going to put up on the screen right now, at Evelyn Leite, L-E-I-T-E, Leite.com. Evelyn has a copy of this book right there. Is that right, Evelyn? That's awesome. And people can, they can contact you there. Is that right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we never want anybody to go away. I have a saying that books write us. We don't write books. Some of my books I've changed so much when I've written those books and learned things about myself. How would you say that book has changed you as you wrote the book?
I've always had quite a bit of shame about being a female alcoholic, being sexually abused. And even though I overcame a lot of it, writing this book and putting it out there in public was kind of very healing, actually. And in it, it was kind of like, here I am, and here might be you. Take a look and see if this can help you, because I would love to help you.
Yeah. You know, there was an old book, it just came to me right now, a book that was written years ago, was called I'm Okay, You're Okay. I think that was the title.
Yes, that's one of the first self-help books that we had.
You know, it was probably one of the first books that was kind of helped us to self-reflect and realize that we're not alone, that there are other people out there going through these challenges. How important does the recovery movement play with people getting recovery?
Well, here's a problem, Ken. The society has dumbed down, or I don't know if that's what it is, but they don't confront this problem for what it is. So now, instead of being alcoholism, it's substance abuse disorder. And instead of being a drunk, you might have a substance abuse problem. And the thing is, we have to call it what it is. And it never changes. I mean, thousands of years, alcoholism doesn't change. The symptoms are the same. The actions are the same. But society has found a way to make it more flat, or palace.
That's right.
I'm sorry. It's mispronounced.
Well, you know, that's interesting because, if it walks like a duck, it quacks like a duck. It's probably a duck. And no matter what you call it a turkey, but it's still a duck. So I think that's what you're saying here. And, you know, there's what you said earlier, what is the ultimate problem here for people that have these addiction problems or substance abuse problems? We can gentle it. It's fine. But what's the cause? And, you know, from my experience, the ultimate cause is we don't know ourselves and we don't know God. I think that's the ultimate. But we don't know why we're here. That's my point of view. What's yours?
Well, in my growing up, it was just natural. Peter drank. My father never drank at home. But he drank away from home. And growing up, there is this thing about alcohol is just natural. We didn't call him a drunk. He worked all the time. We didn't call him an alcoholic. That would have been a moral issue back then. And not a moral issue. It's a disease. We didn't know that. But a lot of people still don't know that. They still judge. And they get mad, they get angry at alcoholics, and they don't realize this man is really sick or this woman is really sick. And I move to help as much as I can without enabling. And tell you what, that is the hard part, because enabling is what we do to protect ourselves, not them.
Yeah. That's what we do to protect ourselves. That's important. And it takes courage to change. And it takes courage to step up and call a spade a spade. And it takes courage to go out and make a phone call and get help. It takes courage to go out and read Evelyn's book and start to wake up and relate to what's really going on here. A lot of people, there's shame around being the, let's say, the wife of an alcoholic or even being the alcoholic. And I think what you touched on was that part where the codependent of the alcoholic, you're doing things that are hurting yourself. And you know it. There's some consciousness around that. And so I feel like that may be where some of the shame comes from. What's your thought around that?
Well, there's a lot of shame in our society. We're a shame-based society. Not everybody accepts that or talks about it. But we have certain things that constitute what a man should be. Other things that constitute what a woman should be. They should not fall short of this goal. They should not have a problem. They should. And in my life, it was always to present yourself as a person who knows everything, does everything, has everything under control, because that was my mom. And never admit to a problem. And one of my first books was Just Fine, Thank You, because my dad could be gone for days. And when he got home, he could be really verbally abusive. And yet if someone asked my mother, how are you doing? She'd say, oh, I'm just fine, thank you. So I titled one of my books that.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. We live in a culture that's a culture of in search of excellence, right? We're always trying to, be more, better and better and better.
Right. So I wouldn't be perfect.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to improve and be better. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that. And Devil is not saying that. But there comes a point where, and I think we're making the shift more and more to this, there's an authenticity that was missing back, maybe it's missing in your life today. But being authentic is being able to be a whole person. A holistic person, right? Where you've got flaws that you're working on. You've got challenges that are happening in your life. You've also got the excellence and everything you've accomplished, but it's a whole being. It's not what you're not one part of that is my experience.
What I love about some of the music that the young people write today is they put it all out there. If you listen to the music, they talk about their feelings. They talk about what they're going through. That never used to happen. Yeah. It was always pie in the sky, and or romance or something, you know, some fantasy music. But now the kids are really teaching us something about being real, and being real is where it's at.
It is where it's at, and it's that place. Yeah, we grew up in a generation where, you know, as our generation, I'm glad it's changing, but.
You know, the prince was on his way, right? The fairy godmother was coming. there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You just got to find it, right?
You got to work for it.
You got to work hard, too. And, you know, if you're not doing that, then, you know, and you're there's something off. But
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Today, I think it's really what we're doing right now. You know, it's like sharing with the readers of this new book in my audience that this is a autobiography of Evelyn in a certain sense. But it's also a place that you can, you know, I think when people can relate to our stories, they can heal. That's the bottom line.
Yes.
Yeah. And so if my readers are out there, we want to put that book up back up on the screen there for all of you, because it's, first of all, what a beautiful book cover you did there. And what a beautiful presentation that you've talked about within this book. Yeah, why one step at a time, by the way? Why one step at a time? Why not conquer it all?
Well, the 12-step program I belong to, we do things one step at a time, one day at a time, sometimes 1 hour at a time. When you get sober, sometimes you have to stay sober for 5 minutes at a time. And the boots represent my heritage. I grew up in cowboy country. And my family's rodeo, and those are my boots, actually.
Wow. Okay. So it doesn't really matter where you grew up, does it? Whether you're in a cowboy country or you're in the middle of the city in L.A. Yeah, we all face the same kind of challenges. Is what.
Well, that's it. All over the world, I've talked to people in London and Sweden and other places. It's all the same story. Drunk is drunk. Pain is pain.
Well, you know, one of the things that I got is that we all share this common database. And, you know, you might call it, some people call it the Akashic Record. And some people call it the universal mind. Some people call it the cosmic consciousness mind. And there's a lot of words for this, but my theory is kind of this. I don't think it's a theory anymore. I think that we're really learning how everything is all connected. You know, whether it's through the physical sciences or through quantum physics, quantum mechanics, neuroscience, everything's got this wave that we're connected. And so my point is this, is if you're an alcoholic in China or you're an alcoholic in the United States, you're going to predominantly be tuning into this database, okay, depending on the level of your disease, and it's going to be telling you certain things. And I can almost guarantee, I've tested this there, I need to go test it. But if you're an alcoholic in China, you're having the same types of thoughts that the alcoholic over here in the United States is. That's what I believe. What do you say? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I have talked to people from a lot of different places. There's no difference in, I mean, there's, it's always shame, moral issues. I don't care where you come from. It is the feeling of being less than. It is worry about acceptance. And the thing about alcoholism is when alcoholism exists, usually another addiction exists with it, possibly sexual addiction, possibly food disorder, possibly work addiction, something. It doesn't exist by itself. And so you start.
What's your thought on my, let me tell you my thought on why that is. I believe that addictions take form a lot of times because, well, of course, we can model behavior. We can see others normalize things that are addictions, and we start to take down on ourselves. But a lot of times, I believe the addictions form, we're just trying to feel normal, okay, or feel healthy. We're just trying to feel a certain way. So the food addict will eat, because it's making them feel a certain way. They don't have to feel those emotions like maybe they would if they didn't eat. Or the drug addict is trying to, you know, he starts out, I have a backache and now I'm on this drug. Now the drug makes me feel a little better than my normal life. So I'm going to try to use that to feel healthy or normal. That's my thought. I'm sure there's a lot, it goes a lot deeper than that. But what do you say to that?
It's always about pain. And pain is always about something underneath. And if you scratch an alcoholic, you'll usually find a codependent. And when you find a codependent, you find guilt, shame, remorse, and fear, incredible fear. But it takes sometimes years to get to that. So the thing that I would say to people is never give up. Never give up. Keep searching. Keep
searching.
Stay sober.
Yeah, the voice I heard, I was in counseling in 1992, and I've been there for a year. And this therapist was an amazing therapist. He helped me so much. And what I started hearing this little voice that said, you have to feel the pain to make the change. Now, I never heard that voice. I put it on sticky notes. I put it on my refrigerator. I grabbed that note and I took it in the doctor's office for my weekly appointment. And I sat down and I said, Doc, I'm hearing these voices. He says, what do the voices say? Well, they say, I've got to feel the pain to make the change. He paused. He looked at me and he said, Ken, I can't do anything more for you. You have to follow that voice. And as I walked out of his office thinking, is he crazy? Doesn't like me anymore. He's crazy. He's telling me to follow a voice. It came to me. What's the voice saying? Well, if I got to feel the pain, what's the most painful thing I could do today? For me, that was to pick up the telephone and call AA and then walk into a meeting that night. That was it, but it was that voice. And I've used that line in my life. You got to feel the pain to make the change. No matter what I do, if I need to go to the gym and build muscle, it's going to be a little painful. Okay. If I have to talk about my relationship to get it better, it's going to be a little painful, right? It's going to be something maybe I don't want to do, but I've used that my whole life to be able to help me to do things that I don't necessarily want to do, but I know I need to do. Yeah. Well, okay. What's next for you? Where do you go from here with all your success? You're helping people, you're helping addicts, you're helping children. What's next for Evelyn here?
I just want to continue to get the word out, the message out to people. I have so many wonderful people in my life, and you're one of them. It's just been amazing what happens and how God works. And I trust that what it probably will.
It's a pretty amazing way to live a life. I've lived a life in sobriety of miracles, magic, and synchronicity. The people, places, and things that I want in my life, they show up, but it's like magic. It's very magical. right? You can relate, right? Because don't you feel like we live in a bubble sometimes? Not that we're not in the real world and go through real world challenges, because we do. We're all growing, learning, and evolving and developing ourselves. But there's this other part to it that is, it's simply magical. And I wish everybody could live in that place, you know. And by the way, you can if you do the work, because what my experience has been.
I think the people who hesitate to go get help don't realize what's waiting for them. And that's another thing that I'm trying to get out there. What is waiting for you is the most wonderful life you could imagine. It's not about worry and shame and being less than. It's about being what God wanted you to be and who you are. And how
there's right now, I think they said somewhere around, just looking at the psychology reports on this thing they call baseline stress, which is stress that's unconscious. And I think it's like, you know, it's a little higher in women right now than it is in men, believe it or not. But this baseline stress is that feeling that there's always something just not right. And, you know, you don't have to live that way, okay? You don't have to try to fix that baseline stress with alcohol, drug, food, any kind of addictions. There is ways, and Evelyn, if you come and see Evelyn and have a meeting, a session with her, she can give you the ways. I know her. She can give you the ways to let go of this baseline stress permanently, right? How cool would that be? Wow. That'd be amazing. If everybody did that, can you imagine how much more peace we'd have in this world, how much more joy we'd have in this world?
If people would stop being so competitive, I think one of the things that's happening in our world now is the competition is so destructive.
Well, we were taught negative forms of competition. You know, competition, I'm an athlete. So my competition is with me, okay, to improve, to develop, to get a little better. But when we start using competition to tear down other people for the benefit of being number one, then we're really gone down the wrong path. Whether it's in business and you're trying to compete with your business of like products and you're trying to figure out how to tear them down so yours is better, that's just the wrong place to be in this world, right, Evelyn? It's not healthy.
That's right.
The biggest voice does not matter.
I work with the with many very famous, wealthy, rich people that they get the top of their career. You know, they're in the mid 40s or 50s, and they get up there, and all of a sudden, you know, they're starting to realize that they have health issues, they have relationship issues, they have issues with their friends and their families, and they're like, oh, I did everything right. Well, maybe you didn't. Maybe there's some other pieces that you missed along the way. And a lot of times they're battling health issues now, Evelyn, you know, because they haven't balanced their life, right? Yeah. So. All right. Well, listen, I'm about out of time, but let's tell them one more time where to go and pick up the audio version of the book. By the way, where can they get the hard copy of the book, though?
The hard copy is on Amazon.
Okay.
Right. The free audio copy is on my website.
Okay, good. And the free audio is on Evelyn Leite, LEITE.com. Leite. Evelyn Leite, I love that name. Evelyn, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here today and sharing your wisdom, strength, and hope with my audience. It really makes a difference.
Thank you, Ken. It's been a joy to be with you.
Thank you. And I want to thank all of you for joining us today. So if this was an important conversation for you, then take the next step. And the next step is to do for yourself what might feel difficult, But you within you, you have courage, you have strength, you have wisdom, you're within yourself, you know, and it's about tapping into that. Here's what I would ask you to ask. What are the three most courageous steps I can take today as a result of listening to this show? I'll repeat that. Write it down. What are the three most important steps I can take today as a result of listening to the Heal It show? Hope you answer that question. Until next time, we look forward to seeing you, and hopefully you'll pass this show on to those that you love. Take care.